The viewpoints expressed in the following program are not necessarily those of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. The following program contains subject matter and realistic language that some listeners may find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised. Well, good afternoon, Savannah. It's a little rainy and dreary out there, but it's just past 12 o'clock on this Friday, and that means you're now listening to Literature on WRUU 107.5 FM. I'm Lee Rich, and as our regular listeners know, we've actually been on hiatus for a little while, but we are back, and we are still dedicated to our original mission, which is exploring and examining thought-provoking and groundbreaking books and writing of the present and the past. Now, I say we because we've changed things up just a little bit. I'm not alone anymore. I have a fabulous co-host now, Mr. P.T. Bridgeport, who many of you actually probably listen to on Saturday evenings, 5 p.m., when the moon sings. P.T., how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Lee. Thank you. Lee decided that she wanted something other than the noble objectives of the show, so she invited me on. And we have a third person in the studio with us today, and that's Jen Rich.
Yes, Jennifer Rich, who is the executive director of Mikveh Israel Synagogue, just around the corner from us. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for inviting me. I'm pleased to be here.
Well, thanks for joining PT and me. So even though we're a little bit late in the game, we're actually going to spend today talking a little bit about Hanukkah, as well as a story from a Yiddish writer, Isaac Peretz, called The Hanukkah Light. Now, Jennifer, we're a couple of days late. Hanukkah is over. Am I correct?
Yes, it is over and gone.
It is over.
For the year.
For the year. It will come back next year. Next week, PT and I will take a look at some Christmas-related short stories as well, but we really wanted to have a chance to talk about Isaac Peretz, as well as the Hanukkah story, and so mix a little bit of history, a little bit of literature, and maybe have a little fun. So let's get started. I grew up, learning about Hanukkah, celebrating Hanukkah. I'm pretty ashamed about how little I actually really know about Hanukkah. Why do Jews celebrate Hanukkah? Jen, do you want to get us started?
Well, Jews celebrate Hanukkah as a way to honor the miracle that occurred many, many years ago when the Greeks had taken over of Jerusalem and had started to make it very difficult for the Jews to practice their religion. I think PT knows some of the historical references a little bit better than myself, but the first temple of Jerusalem I'm a little bit nervous.
That's
this morning.
Okay. Guess
I
what,
better
Jen?
Relax.
I haven't been on air in a little while myself. I'm a little nervous too.
Okay.
But absolutely. So yeah. So the Greeks had taken over the temple, and basically under Antiochus had basically banned a lot of Jewish practices.
Yes. Yes. Antiochus had made it so that the Jews could not practice the religion as they would like to. He decided to build an idol in the middle of the temple, which, as we may not know, that Judaism is completely opposed to idol worship. He also began or wanted to institute sacrifices of swine, which is also very much against Jewish practice.
Right.
So there became an uprising, and the Maccabees came and were able to defeat Antiochus. And during the war, the eternal light was damaged, and the eternal light is a light that you can actually see in synagogues even today. It's always burning near the ark where the Torahs are held. And they thought that they had just enough oil for one night, but it actually, as a miracle, stayed lit for 8 nights, and it gave them enough time to get more oil.
Right. So, Yeah, which is why Hanukkah is also sometimes known as the Festival of Lights.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
And we're going to circle back around eventually. We'll talk with PT a little bit more about Antiochus and the history. But we'll circle back around to talk about the difference between a menorah and a Hanukkiah mm-hmm. in relation to the eternal light. Many people might not know what a Hanukkiah is. So, PT, do you want to add any information about the history? So Antiochus was technically in the Syrian part of the world?
He was in the Syrian part of the world. Actually, his part of the empire was not only Syria, but it was southern Turkey. It was mostly most of Iran, Iraq, pretty large. His dynasty came about after the death of Alexander the Great, and it was Greek-based, although they were really Macedonian. But one of the things they always did is they allowed the people that they conquered to keep their culture substantially. Sometimes they floated a Greek culture over it, and the culture wound up being an amalgam of the two. And Antiochus, his behavior in this point was completely against the way that the empires were run at the time. So it's kind of remarkable for that. He had just been prevented from conquering Egypt. He got control over Palestine from that war, and he perhaps felt that the more traditional Jews were going to be an underground for the Pharaoh. And so he did things that were not only not integrative, but they were totally out of Jewish practice, as mm-hmm. as Jen mentioned, right. and that lit off the war.
Right, mm-hmm. And so not only do you have this battle, this fight against what Antiochus was doing to the Jews and the Jewish traditions and Jewish identity and the Jewish temple, but you also have strife that's happening between the more traditional Jewish people in the region at the time and some of the more Hellenized or assimilated Jews. Is that also part of the Hanukkah story?
That is. It's, I would say, one of the less known parts, as you mentioned, and I look back as well. During our Jewish upbringing and education, that really wasn't discussed. But there was a large percentage of Jews that embraced much of the Greek life and ways and lifestyles in that time, and the Jews who wanted to retain the more traditional ways were very upset by that. So who knows if Antiochus wouldn't have tried what he did, how that would have all played out. But there was definitely some conflict that we saw back then that is present today as well.
Well, if you're just now joining us, this is Listening to Literature on WRUU 107.5 FM. I'm Lee Rich, here with my co-host, Mr. P.T. Bridgeport, and we have a guest today in the studio, Jennifer Rich, Executive Director of Mikveh Israel here in Savannah. We're talking a little bit about the history of Hanukkah, even though we're several days past past the end of the holiday. But we also wanted to talk about a Yiddish writer whose work was translated into English in the early 1900s by Helena Frank. The Yiddish writer is Isaac Peretz. And one of his stories, which you can actually find in various places, it's in the public domain now, is called The Hanukkah Light. And in Peretz's story, he was a Polish Jew, right, writing in Yiddish. But in The Hanukkah Light, he actually kind of retells the story of Hanukkah. And in part, it seems like he is sort of focusing on this difference between the more traditional Jews in the community and maybe some of the more assimilated Jews in the community. I don't know. I don't know if either one of you want to talk about the sort of the setup for Peretz's story, or I can do that as well. All right, I'll take the lead.
Lead.
So this is a very short story about a young Hebrew teacher, Hebrew tutor. And I started to think, you know, Peretz actually spent part of his earlier life as a Hebrew teacher. So I don't know if he's digging into his own experience here, but about a young Hebrew tutor who's been called to a Jewish merchant's house to give Hebrew grammar lessons to the young son. And in that household, in that Jewish merchant's household, there are three generations. The grandfather, whom Peretz calls the old housemaster. Then there's the merchant himself, whom he calls the young housemaster. And then the merchant's wife and at least two children, a young boy who, you know, is here to have grammar lessons, and a young lady who's sitting and reading a novel. So three generations of Jews. I tend to see in this story the old housemaster is the clear traditionalist. I tend to see the daughter as being a little bit more on the modern assimilation side, whereas the father, the young housemaster, seems like he's traditional except for when it's practical. He's a merchant. He's got to, you know, engage with all these different, you know, different people, different, you know, keep his business going. I don't know. What's your take? Do you think this is a story about traditional versus assimilation that's rooted in that Hanukkah story?
I think there definitely is. And I think it's even one of the themes of Jewish life back in his era, the constant push and pull between traditional practices and the things that have to be done to keep money flowing in and keep yourself well in what was a very hostile outside world.
Absolutely. I think that one of the challenges to Jews has always been walking that fine line between maintaining your practice, maintaining your spiritual roots, maintaining the traditions in light of the pressures of modern life, whatever age that was. Right. And it's something that in many ways is a wonder that Judaism has survived with so much pressure because we're such a small minority. But it's something that to this day, every family, these are discussions that people have for sure in Jewish homes and the Jewish community in large.
So going back to the Maccabees' time, to Peretz's time, and he was born in the mid-1800s and died, I think, in the early 1900s, to our modern times, people of the Jewish faith and Jewish culture are still kind of struggling with that fine line between how do we keep our Jewish identity as well as how do we participate in the community, assimilate and participate in the communities in which we're involved that might be beyond the Jewish community.
Absolutely. That's very true.
Okay. One of the questions I've always had, and then maybe we'll dig into Peretz's story a little bit here. Hanukkah really is sort of a minor holiday in the scope of all the Jewish holidays. Is that correct?
Yes, I would say so. I think that the major holidays are for sure Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, and Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Passover is something that most people are very well aware of, and it's one of the most highly participative holidays of all the Jewish holidays. So Hanukkah is always seen as a minor holiday, but I think that there's so much to learn from it if you understand the real history behind it and the real miracles that can be drawn from the story.
Right, absolutely. Let's go back to that question I had earlier about the difference between the menorah and the Hanukkiah. At one point in Peretz's story called The Hanukkah Light, the tutor is already at the merchant's house. The young boy, of course, it's the first night of Hanukkah. The young boy is like, oh, I don't want to learn Hebrew grammar. It's Hanukkah. Why should we learn Hebrew grammar? And so they finally give the young boy a pass. But they invite the tutor to stay for tea and for rascals with poppy seed, which is a kind of cake, apparently. But the narrator, the tutor, as he sits at the table, you know, with this family to have tea and cake, this is what he says, and this is Isaac Peretz's words from his story, The Hanukkah Light. "Involuntarily, I glance at the Hanukkah light opposite to me in the window. It burns so sadly, so low, as if ashamed in the presence of the great silvered lamp hanging over the dining table and lighting so brilliantly the elegant tea service." When I was reading this part, of course, it made me think of the eternal flame and the Hanukkah light and the lighting of growing up what we always called the menorah. Mm-hmm. Jen, what's the difference between a menorah and a Hanukkiah? Are they the same thing?
They actually aren't. A Hanukkiah is a type of menorah, but the menorah is a Hebrew word for lamp, and it specifically refers to the seven-branched candelabra that was part of the decor or part of the faith in the ancient temple in Jerusalem. So that would be three branches on one side, three on the other, and then a center, okay, part of the branch. So the difference, obviously, is that the Hanukkiah has nine branches. It's got four on each side for the eight nights of Hanukkah, and then it's got what's called a shomer, which is the helper candle that you light first that you use to light the other lights. One other thing I'll mention, very interesting, is so during the Spanish Inquisition in Spain and Portugal, there were something called crypto Jews. You know, the Catholic Church at the time was preventing Jews or dispersing them all over out of Spain and Portugal. Right. So people who remained there were called crypto Jews, and they would practice their religion in secret. So at Mikveh Israel, we actually have a Hanukkiah that is made out of brass that folds down so that they can hide it. So you can see that, you know, this was in the 14th, 15th centuries that people were trying to maintain their religion in any way that they could, in a very visible way with a folding Hanukkiah.
Wow. To be able to, and lighting of the Hanukkiah is reminiscent of lighting of that menorah in the ancient temple of the eternal flame. The connection?
That's correct.
Okay, so that folding Hanukkiah is a way of continuing to practice keeping that eternal flame lit while still, you know, hiding from the inquisitors.
Right.
Oh, okay. So let's go back into Peretz's story. The other thing, you know, most everybody, when we think of Hanukkah, whether you're Jewish or not, one of the symbols that comes to mind is the dreidel, right? Mm-hmm. And in Peretz's story, the young Hebrew scholar, the young boy who doesn't want to learn his Hebrew grammar on the first night of Hanukkah, is actually playing with something akin to a dreidel. I'm assuming it's a dreidel. And here's what Peretz says in his story. The young housemaster is the father, right? The young housemaster abandons himself once more to his reflections. He's playing with a deck of cards in anticipation of maybe some guests coming over for some type of card game. The narrator says, "My pupil sends a top spinning across the table. The old man, his grandfather, lays down his book and stretches out a hand for his tea." I didn't know. I mean, I played with the dreidel. I know all the symbols of the dreidel. Does any of either of you know why the dreidel, where the dreidel comes from?
No, actually.
Right, okay, good.
Can you tell us?
You know, I'm glad that I wasn't the only one. And granted, I didn't do a ton of research, so take this for what it is. But the little that I read almost said that obviously a dreidel is a spinning top, a four-sided spinning top. But apparently it said that the dreidel came from a tradition out of either Ireland or England that got picked up in Germany, the spinning top that people played with and played this game with it around Christmas time. And I'm assuming then that the Jews in the region then also adopted it. But when I think of a dreidel, I think of it as so fundamentally related to Hanukkah. And yet it seems like with a lot of our traditions of any background, of any faith, there is that assimilation that comes in.
I think that's true. I think there's always a certain amount of cultural assimilation, whether the community thinks it's a good idea or not. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we aren't doing the same sort of thing with Christmas, except the cultural assimilation has gotten so huge it tends to almost outshine the religious aspect.
Absolutely. Then maybe like with the fish and water, we can't really see our cultural assimilations and our cultural borrowings while we're in the middle of it?
Mm-hmm. That's frequently true, yeah. Okay. But sometimes we can, and sometimes it's a conscious decision. It's not an unconscious one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a question, Lee.
Yes, PG.
As long as we're doing puzzlers here. There's another passage in the story where the young lady offers the tutor some tea.
Yes, and we should add in here, I don't mean to interrupt you, PT, we should add in here that the young tutor seems to have, he has a fancy for the young lady.
Oh,
but
does he ever.
Sure.
He has the fanciest of fancies for the young lady.
Okay, go ahead, PT.
But she serves him tea, and then he's asked if he wants milk, and the pupil says, "Look out, the milk is smoked." And an exclamation escapes her. "How can you be so?" And then the scene kind of dies. What's the implication of smoked milk?
I had that very same question. Jennifer, do you have any clue as to smoked milk?
I'm clueless.
No, my assumption, now granted, and this is coming from my very limited knowledge, I'm a huge tea drinker, but because of my heritage, I can't actually drink real milk. I don't know if maybe they had heated the milk and it was, you know, I don't know if anyone's heated milk to a certain degree, but at a certain point it becomes fairly inedible. That would be my assumption, but I don't actually know. We might need somebody either from the Polish region at that time or a literary scholar to give us some insight.
I wouldn't imagine that she'd serve it to him if it was spoiled. Mm-mm, but
no.
I thought maybe there was some sort of cultural thing there. I really don't know.
No, that's a great question, though. We'll have to find out.
Right. But speaking of cultural things and food, before, you know, we have a couple minutes. We'll take a little break in a few minutes. But Jennifer, we were talking a little bit beforehand. One of the things we think of when we think of Hanukkah is latkes. Can you tell us where the heck do latkes come from? I mean, they're tasty. We would never turn them down, but where do they come from?
Well, the latkes and actually anything eaten during Hanukkah time should be something cooked in oil, the oil representing the lamp and the miracle of Hanukkah. So when you think about what you want to fry in oil or cook in oil, we immediately think in modern times of a fried potato, you know, but in the very beginning in the Middle East, potatoes actually didn't exist. So what I found out through my research, and this is totally new to me at 48 years old, is that originally latkes were fried ricotta cheese, mm-hmm. which, you know, being in the Middle East and being near Greek and Italians, that makes sense. So originally it was, they would fry the ricotta cheese and eat it that way. And then as the Jews moved into the Eastern European countries and then eventually to where potatoes were existent, then they would fry potatoes into latkes. I would love to try the fried ricotta cheese. I may stop having the fried potato latkes.
Right. I was just going to ask if next year do you think you might switch over?
Let's try it. That sounds good.
Yeah, absolutely. Sign me up for a seat at your table. It's right about at the half past of the hour, so we're going to take a very quick break here for station identification and a few announcements. But when we come back, we will continue our conversation with Jennifer Rich, Executive Director of Mikveh Israel. We're doing a little episode today about Hanukkah, the history of Hanukkah, and a short story about Hanukkah called The Hanukkah Light by Isaac Peretz. But we'll be back in a few moments.
Mm-hmm.
This is WRUU-LP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with Global Soul.
The open enrollment period under the Affordable Care Act will begin on November 1st and end on December 15th. If you need help enrolling, Insure Georgia is a nonprofit, vendor, and politically neutral assistance program with telephone, online, and in-person navigators available to help. Open enrollment events will be held in Chatham County. Telephone navigators are available at 1-866-988-8246. Online navigators and more information is available at insureGA.org.
WRUU 107.5 FM is a new and different listener-supported and all-volunteer community radio station for Savannah. Our diverse broadcast and web programming is supported by generous listeners who value our passion and spunk. We are independent of other media and receive no government or large corporate support. People like you are the largest and most important source of our funding. Go to WRUU.org to find out how you can make a one-time or monthly contribution. Thank you.
If you're just now joining us, this is Listening to Literature on WRUU 107.5 FM. I'm Lee Rich, here with my fabulous co-host, Mr. P.T. Bridgeport, and our guest today, Jennifer Rich, who's Executive Director of Mikveh Israel here in historic downtown Savannah. We've been talking today about Hanukkah and a story, short story by Isaac Peretz, who was one of the Yiddishists, he came out of the Jewish Enlightenment, but he was a Polish author and playwright, among many other things that he did. And was one of he's known as one of the three great classical Yiddish writers. This story has been translated into English, as has most of his writing. So the Hanukkah light. Before the break, we were talking about some symbols of Hanukkah, especially some foods of Hanukkah. Jennifer was just telling us about the latke. One of the other things I see in this story by Peretz is an intimation about gelt. Now, Jennifer, quickly, tell us what the heck gelt is.
Well, the way we've always looked at gelt is it's gold-wrapped chocolate coins.
In modern days, when we were growing up, right?
Right,
and
right.
Let me tell you, everybody, even the parents want the gelt from Hanukkah.
Right, and now when we were kids, it was just milk chocolate. Now it's all different kinds of chocolate. I think even gluten-free chocolate, but it can be dark chocolate, milk chocolate.
All the kids get the good stuff, don't they?
Yep.
But gelt actually means money. Is that correct?
That is correct. And for Hanukkah celebrations, sometimes, you know, grandparents will give you a check or a little money for Hanukkah. So you say thank you for the Hanukkah gelt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and sometimes that can be even better than the chocolate gelt, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting. So Peretz's story, The Hanukkah Light, opens up. Like I said, it's this, you know, young man. He's a Hebrew tutor, and he has been called by this Jewish merchant to come give the Jewish merchant's son some Hebrew grammar lessons. And the young tutor doesn't necessarily want to go. Here's how the story starts. This is Isaac Peretz's words, translated by Helena Frank. My top coat was already in my hand, and yet I could not decide to go or not to go to give my lesson. Oh, it is so unpleasant outside, such horrible weather, a mile's trudge, and then what? Right? So he really doesn't want to go give this lesson. As he says, he thinks about what he's going to do with this young boy in the grammar lessons. Once more, pakad, pakati, I guess doing verb conjugations, right? But a little bit later in the story, just a few paragraphs down, we find out that the young tutor has a mother who's sick, right? A mother who's sick at home, and the felcher. And Jen, this is in Helena Frank's translation. Did you know what a felcher was, Jennifer?
I did not.
Yeah, so I had to look at Helena Frank's footnote, and it was sort of like a healthcare provider, you know, mm-hmm. a doctor of sorts. The felcher has told the tutor's mother, and let me see if I can find it in the story, that she just needs maybe some woolen socks, just a little something to keep her warm, and then maybe she can, you know, be restored to some health. And the minute that the mother, this is what the mother says, that the tutor's thinking back on, "Listen, my mother's weak voice from the bed recalls me to myself. The Felcher says, if only I had a pair of warm woolen socks, I might creep about the room a little." And then the tutor thinks to himself, that, of course, decides it. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about this tradition of giving gelt, whether chocolate or in real form, on Hanukkah. It made me sort of think here about, I guess, young yeshiva students at some point in time, maybe when they're giving lessons, were they given gelt maybe by merchants such as the one in here for lessons? Is that part of where this tradition of gelt comes from?
Perhaps. It was very much... they would offer their services, and then they would get paid for the services. So that is perhaps where it originally came from. I don't know if perhaps during Hanukkah time they would pay them a little bit extra, maybe as an extra gift, but perhaps that is where the idea comes from.
So even though Peretz doesn't necessarily mention gelt per se in the story, I think it does come through. Now, PT, I don't know if in your researching on the subject, if you ran across any relation to gelt or coins or money in Antiochus' time after the Maccabees, after the success of the Maccabees.
I did not. Okay. I did not. My research was kind of focused on the political background and so forth and so on, so I really can't speak to that.
So it was just me focusing on the money aspect, right?
Don't mind me. I'm just sitting over here being fabulous.
That you are being fabulous. The little that I read, and again, I didn't get too far in the research, but it made me think that after many regime changes or many successful battles, I think many cultures do this, but I read a little piece that said the Hasmoneans, which I believe was the kingdom that arose from the Maccabees, minted coins, national coins, to say, aha, here we are, you know. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that ties to the gelt, but this is a common theme, minting of coins in any regime,
at that particular time, being able to mint your own coins was a sign that you'd arrived. You were a unitary people and so forth and so on. And at that point, well, Antiochus minted his coins, of course, before he got involved in all this. Right. But he started making very pointed reference to his nature as a god. And so all that worked into it, too.
Right.
It's interesting. And they were actually afforded the opportunity to do that because one of the things that the Greeks after Alexander did, and this works into the assimilation thing, is they created something new cultural things out of an amalgam of the Greek things and the native things. The Ptolemies in Egypt actually created a whole new pantheon of gods that sort of looked like the old one, but sort of didn't too. And they successfully pulled that off in Egypt, but didn't work at all well in other areas like Palestine.
Mm-hmm. It makes me think. So now when I read Peretz's story, The Hanukkah Light, I really see the traditionalist and the grandfather, I'm on the fence, maybe being practically assimilated in, like I said, in the son or the father, and then a little bit more modernity in the younger people in the room. Jennifer and or PT, what's your take on this story, or what aspect of the story do you like the most? Is there a passage, or?
Well, personally, I'm terrifically conflicted because I see virtues in every character, to be quite frank.
Absolutely. And I think that's what makes good writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The old housemaster has a much finer sense of the actual history behind Hanukkah, and even though he's opposed to things like the Earth traveling around the sun.
That's right. Yeah, he says, you can come in and teach the young boy grammar, but don't teach him that the Earth goes around the
right.
sun.
the younger housemaster is dealing with the realities of dealing with his traditions and beliefs versus his need to integrate with the outside right. society.
Right. Mm-hmm. Pretz does say, and I'll let you get back there, P.T., Pretz does say this about the young housemaster, but he is obliged, as a merchant, to mix with men, to wear a hat and a stiff shirt, to permit his wife to visit the theater, his daughter to read books, and to engage a tutor for his son.
Mm-hmm. Right, and you notice in the story that the young housemaster's wife is off at the theater, not necessarily with everybody knowing that.
That's mm-hmm. right, right.
The daughter is reading novels, which is probably not the traditional practice at the time right. either.
While her father is reading the Benedictions, particularly in the Benedictions, the place about the Hanukkah story. Mm-hmm. Jennifer, what aspects of the story do you like or disagree with, or a passage that moves you?
Well, one of the pieces that is very interesting is the idea that that the young housemaster is engaging a tutor for his son, which would, to me, indicate that his son would go to a regular school or is not in a yeshiva, right. which would be a very big change for a Jewish family at that point in our existence. Typically, a young boy would be in a yeshiva, being trained to become a rabbi, learning to study Torah and such. But if he needs a tutor, then he would not be getting that. He would be learning more secular things in school. Also, the fact that the daughter is reading a novel is quite modern because many Jewish women of that time, or women in all communities at that time, were not, they did not seek education for them. They would go into a trade, or they would need to help their mothers at home. Mm-hmm. So it's certainly a very modern family dynamic for this time in our history.
Right, absolutely. And in the introduction to the 1906 collection and translation of many of Isaac Peretz's short stories, this was translated by Helena Frank. She makes, and let me get my notes here, she makes note that that some people said, oh, translating stories by the Yiddishist writers like these will be too Jewish for the Gentile population. And Helena Frank disagrees, and she says, no, Peretz is a distinctly modern writer. And Jennifer, I think you captured that so well. He really is a distinctly modern, and you too, PT, of crafting these very complex characters maybe feeling some internal conflict about their Jewish identity and their place in the larger culture. Mm-hmm. Now, Jennifer, before we maybe move on to some suggestions about other books to read, if you're in the market for last-minute book gifts, you're running a little late, but that's okay. And if they're Hanukkah gifts, then you're really late. What do you think about Hanukkah today? Do you feel like it's become sort of too retail or not?
Well, speaking from an American perspective, you know, I think in Israel, Hanukkah is looked at very differently than it is here in the United States. But I think as a mother of a preteen and a teen, I think that there definitely is pressure to make Hanukkah more Christmas-like. It's very common amongst young Jewish kids as they're growing up to be upset that they can't celebrate Christmas. If a family is both parents are Jewish, as a general rule, you wouldn't. If it's an interfaith family, that's a little different. But I think that in the effort to make it feel more like Christmas, I think you're losing some of the spirituality and some of the deeper meanings behind why the holiday is celebrated. So I think that we all need to remember the reason for why we do these things and to celebrate the reasons why we do these things, even if we integrate some new societal pieces into our celebrations.
Absolutely. And in the Jewish tradition, like in many traditions, there's an emphasis on constantly learning and always asking the question of why. And so mm-hmm. I think you put it very, very beautifully that no matter how old we are, how much we think we might know or not know, that we do need to take a look again and relearn these aspects, even as we maybe pull in new traditions from other cultures as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Let's actually talk about just briefly a little bit about some book suggestions for last minute gift giving. And they don't have to be related to Hanukkah or to any of the holidays of this season. They could be your favorite books in general. But before we move off of the Hanukkah theme, I suppose, we actually did get one recommendation from someone here at WRUU who is essential to us. She saves us every single week.
You must be talking about Patty Guerrero.
I am. She is the one who and among many other things, makes sure that all of you, all of our listeners out there, everyone in the community knows what's coming up on WRUU. And there are times, now PT is better at this than me, but there are times when I give Patty information literally at the 11th hour, and she always manages to disseminate that information and take really great care of us. So in honor of Patty, she is a retired school librarian. I'm hoping that PT, you and I can actually get her to come on the show sometime.
Oh, that would be neat.
Yeah. She says that her favorite book for Hanukkah is Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins by Eric Kimmel and illustrated by Trina Shart Hyman. If you'll permit me, I'm going to just read at least the first maybe paragraph of Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins. It was the first night of Hanukkah. Herschel of Ostropol was walking down the road. He was tired and hungry. Nonetheless, his step was light. Soon he would reach the next village where bright candles, merry songs, and platters piled high with tasty potato latkes awaited him. But when he arrived, the village was silent and dark. Not a single Hanukkah candle could be seen. "Isn't tonight the first night of Hanukkah?" Herschel asked the villagers. "We don't have Hanukkah, Herschel," one of them answered sadly. "No, Hanukkah, how can that be?" "It's because of the goblins. They haunt the old synagogue at the top of the hill. They hate Hanukkah." And so thank you, Patty. If you'd like to know what happens in Herschel and the Hanukkah Goblins by Eric Kimmel. And,
I would.
Yeah, me too. me too. There's one suggestion for a book this holiday season. Jennifer, how about you? What are some favorite books of yours?
There's two books that I really enjoyed reading this past year in 2018. One of them is called The Nightingale by Kristen Hannah, and it's a historical fiction that takes place during World War II in occupied France. And focuses on the tale of two sisters. One is named Vianne and one is named Isabel. And it's about the women and their impact during World War II. One of the women, Vianne, lives in the countryside and is faced with the Nazis taking over her town and the things that she and her friends need to do to subvert what the Nazis are trying to do, and really gives you a perspective of the women who were left behind and how they coped with that situation. And her younger sister, Isabel, becomes a bit of a rebel and fighting against the Nazis in her own way. And it was a remarkable story. It brought to light many, many facts about the German impact on France, but also the powerful things that women were able to do during that time. It was a remarkable book with a very surprising ending.
Okay.
So,
which you won't give away.
No, I won't. I won't. The other book I read that I really loved was called Swimming Lessons by Claire Fuller. Hmm. And this book was about a love affair that developed between English professor who was a very narcissistic guy. He was also a writer, and one of his young students, which in the Me Too movement, that's not such a surprising tale, but it becomes a mystery. And as the woman grows up, she eventually gets tired of him and disappears. And the story of their love goes on through letters that she leaves for him in these piles of old books that he has in their cottage. It was a fantastic book as well.
All right, so two great recommendations. And Jennifer, you and I have talked, you know, time and again, you know, over the years. We both love reading. And we'll get a couple of suggestions from PTL. I'll probably save some of my suggestions for next week. But maybe we have to have you come on again. We should just talk books.
That'd be fun. Yeah.
So, PT, last-minute gift ideas, book gift ideas from you.
Okay, two recommendations based on things that I've just been reading. I just got into the Bruno series of detective novels written by Martin Walker. The fascination here, well, the plots are pretty good, but it takes place in a small town in southern France, and you get a real flavor of the French culture. The second recommendation would be a book called A Brief History of Everyone Who Ever Lived. And it's by Adam Rutherford. The subject is genetics. And it's very informative. Rutherford himself is a geneticist. As much about what genetics can't do as what it can. And sometimes it's things that genetics won't ever do. Some things it's things we just don't know yet. And there's something pretty powerful about admitting that you don't know something.
What a concept.
Right. Unfortunately, sometimes I think I have to admit that every single day, whether I want to or not, whether I want to or not. Well, we have about 9 minutes left, a little bit less than 9 minutes. I know, PT, you brought in a song that we're going to maybe start in around 4 minutes or so. Just to wrap up, not to go back to our Hanukkah theme, but you also, PT, brought in a poem. And I know we won't get through the whole poem, but maybe we should take a look at this poem from Houseman.
Because I have a disordered mind.
A fabulously disordered mind.
Well, yes, if you say so.
I do.
I've heard other opinions. Sometimes
mine's
I
the
hear
only
them
one
frequently.
Who counts.
No, in one of the things that I found interesting is Antiochus wasn't originally called Antiochus. He was originally called Mithridates.
Okay.
And that reminded me of A.E. Houseman's A Shropshire Lad, where Mithridates is actually mentioned. It's in the very last poem of the volume. And in this poem, the poet's brother breaks in and does a critique of the whole idea of poetry. He says, "Terence, this is stupid stuff. You eat your victuals fast enough. It can't be much wrong, it's clear, to see the rate you drink your beer. But, oh, good Lord, the verse you make, it gives a chap a bellyache." And he goes on like this. And then it's Terence's turn to reply. And he says, "Well, one of the things that poetry does is it makes you ready for when disaster strikes." And he says that once there was a king who was in the old days who actually poisoned himself from time to time in small doses, so whenever anybody actually tried to kill him, his system had already acclimatized to it.
A little princess bride, early days.
And for the people who poisoned him, the quote is, "They shook, they stared, white as their shirt. Then it was their poison hurt. I heard the tale, I was told. Mithridates, he died old." And who knows, maybe Houseman had this particular Mithridates in mind.
Absolutely. So he was thinking about the story of Hanukkah too, right?
In his way.
In his way. Well, we're gonna start to wrap up. We're gonna get but not too soon. We still have a song we'd like to play for you. But before we do our ending tasks and things, I do wanna thank very much, Jennifer Rich, Executive Director of Mikveh Israel.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Absolutely. And we're going to get you back on, and we'll sit and talk books. I know we could probably do that probably weeks on end.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
I want to thank you all for listening to Literature Today on WRUU 107.5 FM. I stole this sign off from our program manager, who did let me borrow it, but I think it's perfect for this show, which is good day and good reading. The viewpoints expressed in the preceding program were not necessarily those of WRUU, its license holder, or its staff. This is WRUU LP Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul.